You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Hey, what's up, everyone? I'm Matt Migaki, the vocalist of Cryptopsy and the host of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast, where I sit down with fellow metal musicians. We talk all about their lives and music while sharing killer craft beers. If you've ever wanted to sneak backstage and share a beer with one of your favorite musicians, well, Vox and Hops is the podcast for you. This week on the podcast, I had an amazing conversation with Morgan Lander and SJ Jones about Kitty Pig. There is this episode and over 450 other ones to help you enjoy life, metal, and craft beer. So what are you waiting for? It's time to become a Vox and Hops head. Cheers!
Welcome back to Flying the Call. Today I've got a short and sweet one for you with my conversation with Remember Sports. Their twangy 90s indie punk sound is perfect for the beautiful weather we've been having in Connecticut, and it was a pleasure to break down their new album, Like a Stone, with Carmen. They have a record release show happening via Bandcamp Live this Saturday, and it's not one you're going to want to miss. And as a little bonus, I'm going to add the audio from the interview I did with Downhall for one of the Alternatives live streams a couple weeks back. We broke down each of the album's three singles. Proof is out tomorrow, and I cannot wait to see tons of people experience it for the first time. Enjoy it. I feel like a Stone feels like kind of the obvious next step for Remember Sports, but at the same time, kind of like a huge step forward. And I know that, you know, the preparation and the studio environment were kind of more refined than they have been in the past, which I think probably leads to part of that. Can you tell me a little bit about kind of like that side of things and the effect it had on the album?
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, so it was our first time working in like a real studio with nice stuff. So I think just sort of taking the recording process a bit more seriously gradually is what we've been doing with the past few records, because it's something we're all interested in and we all do on our own a fair amount. But yeah, it's every time we record together, we learn something new from whoever we're doing it with. So yeah, it was really cool. It gave us a lot more space to play with ideas and to work different parts out. So, yeah, it was good.
Yeah, I mean, is there anything in particular that stands out from your time in the studio that, like, you kind of weren't expecting?
No, I mean, I guess we've made a fair amount of albums at this point, and while all our recording experiences were pretty different, it's also pretty the same. It's a lot of just sitting around time for most people, and... Yeah, there's just a lot of snacks consumed, and that all felt pretty much the same. It's just that the space we were in was a bit nicer.
And I feel like, especially on this album, the kind of like the blending of the instrumentals and your voice kind of just really feel especially dialed in and kind of like, you know, go really well with the overall sound of Remember Sports. Was that something that you were kind of like focused more on this time around than in the past?
Yeah, I mean, I think a big difference for me this time was that when I was doing my vocals, I was like alone in the room, and that felt really good. I feel like I'm a pretty physical person when I sing, but I like when anyone else is around, I just get so self-conscious. So I felt like I really, because I was alone, I could just like, you know, do what I needed to do to get the take set. Good to me.
I mean, like that blending that I was talking about, kind of, I feel like it also allows for some of the really memorable moments on the album to me, where like an instrument or two kind of briefly stands out on its own, like, you know, the guitar solo Materialistic or Flossy Dickey, or like the bass part in Falling Awake. I'm curious how you kind of like approach those sections and like go about finding the right, you know, instrument or rhythm or tone for the moment.
Yeah, well, we did a lot of work like in pairs. Me and Jack would write, you know, a progression together, or, you know, trade melodies back and forth or something like that. And sometimes me and Catherine would do that. And a lot of times Catherine and Connor would sort of work as a rhythm pair to sort of work out different parts from the song or of the songs, and just really make sure that like that aspect of it was like locked in. We did a lot of like pre-work for recording because we're pretty meticulous about it. So we made a fair amount of demos before we actually recorded the album. So we like to be pretty well prepared for like all the basic tracking stuff. And then that leaves us time to try newer things or like try instruments that are laying around or that we've never tried before. So that was cool to get to have a chance to do.
For sure. Yeah. And it seems like, you know, collaboration is kind of like has been the name of the game surrounding this album. And I've seen you say that's something that you kind of want to lean into even more in the future. I'm curious how, you know, the writing process kind of compared to the past records.
Yeah. I guess the funny thing is that it's definitely our most collaborative record, but it's still mostly written by me alone. But I feel like it's the most I've ever been open to collaborating with my bandmates, just because it's like writing has always felt so personal to me. And I think it's just like a skill to get to learn how to do that with other people. And it's one I've been hesitant to work on in the past, but I feel like I'm starting to get used to it. And especially knowing Gavin and Jack for like 10 years at this point, I feel pretty comfortable with them. So I think just the more time we spend being a band together, the easier it is to do that with them.
Yeah, that definitely makes a lot of sense. Was there anything like in particular that kind of made you really want to kind of expand on that skill?
I mean, I think it just makes your work better a lot of times. I feel like, I don't know, I've been writing songs for a while and, you know, like my skills only go so far and like my, I don't know, toolbox or whatever. And so it's just like opening yourself up to other people's skills and like what they can bring to the table. I think it just always makes someone's work a little bit better. Just like Catherine and Jack are some of my favorite musicians. So it's, you know, it's not so hard for them to for them to improve on my work, I think.
Yeah, I feel like the way you're talking about that brings to mind like the kind of thing where it's like you're kind of like the sum of like the five people that are closest to you or whatever, like your friends, that like the people that you choose to have in your company.
Definitely.
And I had, you know, I had the album on repeat like all afternoon. It was just kind of like the perfect weather for it. It was really hitting me the right way. It really had me itching for, you know, live shows. Can you talk a little about kind of like capturing that energy and how the live performances compare to the record?
Yeah, I think that from our inception as a band, we were really more interested in playing live shows than we were in recording. And when we did record some stuff earlier on, it was mostly just because we just like wanted some record of how we sounded live. And that was the impetus for that. But yeah, I feel like I don't know if I've changed my position to like prefer recording more to playing live, but I feel like I have a greater just relationship, I think, now with recording, because I feel like I know what I'm doing a little bit more and I have more resources, like knowledge-wise and gear-wise. Yeah, I mean, obviously I love playing live too, but yeah, I think we're getting less strict with ourselves about wanting everything on the record to be what we're able to play live.
And how is it, you know, with the record release show coming up, how does it feel to kind of like be back in the saddle in that way on that side of things?
It feels really amazing. We hadn't played together at all during the pandemic and I didn't play with music with anybody else either. So we had our first full band practice on Monday and it just like felt, it just was like a feeling that I haven't felt in such a long time. It just was really nice. But yeah, so I, you know, it's going to be different with the release show on Saturday, but you know, cause there's no crowd and that part of the energy, but I just playing together right now. I mean, it makes me feel so cheesy, but it just it just is a really good feeling after not doing it for so long.
Definitely. And I mean, this album has both the shortest and the longest Remember sports tracks with Coffee Machine and Out Loud. And I mean, I think kind of in that fact, it kind of means that you don't strictly stick to like the traditional kind of verse, chorus, verse structure. So I'd love to kind of hear about how you approach songwriting, you know, generally, and kind of like when you know that a song is done.
That's a good question. How do I know when a song is done? Sometimes I think I tend to want to go too far with a song that maybe didn't need to be as long as I made it. And it feels easier to me to cut stuff out than to add stuff after you've gotten used to a certain, I don't know, piece of a song. But yeah, I think that so a song like Coffee Machine, Jack wrote the music for and the melody, and I just recorded vocals over a demo that he made for it. And he was like, we can expand on this. Like, this is just something I have to work on if you guys want. And we all just sort of collectively decided, like, no, it doesn't really need to be any longer than this. Like, it just feels like a nice song. Yeah, I don't know. I guess it's just a feeling. And then a song like Out Loud, we don't typically write very long songs. So it was just a really good opportunity, I thought, to have room to play with dynamics, like with so many repeating choruses and repeating phrases and repeating parts of the song happening. You know, there's way more room for different sounds and for different, I don't know, just moments in the song that break it up, I guess.
Yeah, and I think it like really speaks to the flow of the album that I didn't realize that, you know, those songs were so short and so long until I was reading like one of the interviews you did recently, and they kind of like literally called it out. And I was like, oh, okay, that makes sense. I'm curious, like how you kind of approached the sequencing of the album.
Well, I think we sort of knew, usually what I know when either we're writing or coming up with an album track list or a set list, I usually know what I want to begin and end with, but the middle part is what's more fussy to me, I think. Yeah, I don't know. I think we've all sort of decided collectively that Jack is very good at making track lists. And so usually we'll start by saying, or Jack will send us a track list at our request. And, you know, then the rest of us will like switch things around and like make edits or whatever. But I usually don't know where to begin. So it's nice to have, like, sometimes it's just a matter of like, I like to write songs down on like little cards or something, so then I can like look at them and physically move them around and see what works with my eyes. But yeah, sometimes I feel like a good place to start is just like throwing all the cards on the table and starting there and seeing where they start.
Nice. Yeah, and I mean, I know Out Loud was kind of, you were toying with that being the closer versus Odds Are. I kind of went back and forth on that a few times. What was kind of like the thought process behind figuring that out?
Yeah, well, I always like to end, I think, on a pretty dramatic note. Like our last album ends with the song Unwell. And yeah, that's just kind of what I like in an album. And I feel like I didn't want to do that again because it gets boring. Though it is still pretty close to the end. But yeah, Odds Are felt like a little levity at the end of the album, because I think, I don't know, I guess it is still emotionally heavy, but there's less doom involved in this album than I think some of the other albums. So it was good to end on a lighter note, I think.
For sure. Yeah, I feel like Odds Are works really well as the closer. Like, to me, it feels like one of those, like, you know, celebratory, like, hands on each other's shoulders songs with everyone like rocking back and forth, singing along.
Yeah, yeah, that would be cool to see one day.
All right. Can you talk a little about how that one came together?
Yeah, I kind of just, I guess, was singing the chicken tongs part one to myself, and it was just sort of a dumb melody that I was messing around with, and I don't know, I sort of like came up with enough of it in my head that I was like, maybe I'll try to see if this can be a full song. So yeah, I don't know, it feels just like kind of a dumb country song, which is a genre that I really respect. And we listen to a lot of like country radio. The genre, I think, is just very, very out there these days. There's a lot of different there's a lot of different crossovers happening. But yeah, I don't know. I think it just is sort of my version of a little country song, I guess.
Nice. Yeah, I grew up on like 90s radio country, and I really appreciate anytime like a band within like our realm like can bring in those influences. It's like, or the one or two like country albums that like make their way through to me every year, I'm like, yes, this feels right.
Yeah, definitely.
And then another song I wanted to hit on is Eggs, which I feel like every time that it comes on, that first line, my eggs flow right out of me like clockwork every month, just like kind of just catches me a little bit off guard. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, that song?
Yeah, I guess I feel like I sort of regret making such a noticeable first line, because that's not really what I wanted to fixate on in the whole song. But yeah, I think that song in particular is just sort of, well, that was a collaboration between me and Catherine. That was an example of when I felt like a song was finished, and then I sent it to everyone, and Catherine was like, I think I want to add another part to this. So we added the middle section where the long solo is, and yeah, it just turned it into a really different, like, dirgy, dark song than what I had initially written, which was just the three verses, really. So yeah, I think that song sort of is about just feeling like your body is machinery and just like is something that can be controlled or fine-tuned, and instead of just like being a part of you. So yeah.
And how did the kind of like those additional lyrics or the additional parts, like how did that kind of change like the overall feel of the song for you?
Well, adding the additional part, it just sort of, I guess it sort of turned it more into a twangy song, I think, what Catherine added, which was something there when I wrote it initially, but not as emphasized. And yeah, she played side guitar on that, which just sounds country no matter how you do it, really.
For sure. Yeah, I mean, overall, I'd say like Remember Sports has like a really unique sound, which kind of means you don't have like many direct peers that people can like point to and be like, they sound like this band. I'm kind of curious like how that kind of has affected your sense of community as a band.
Yeah, I think people do try to say that we're like the same sort of group of bands. and sometimes I feel like I agree. I think there's definitely, I don't know. I don't think I can speak to how unique we are because I'm too close. But I feel like with bands who are, you know, exist in a community, like we live in Philly, I think that you just naturally pick up on each other's sort of, I guess, I don't want to say ideas, like there's plagiarism happening, but I think just like, you know, ideas and like ways of being and ways of making that just sort of links you together, even if the music doesn't really sound all that similar.
Mm-hmm. And what are some of the bands that you kind of like feel that kinship with?
Well, we're pretty close with the band Friendship in Philly, and I guess they're also sort of an alt twangy sort of band. But yeah, I think, I don't know, we just have made a lot of friends in music just from touring and being a band for all these years. And I feel like every time we tour with a band, for sure. I definitely like, I learn something from the other band every time that like sticks with me.
Awesome. And then I always like to wrap up every episode the same way, which is just by asking for a piece of advice or something you've been thinking about lately that you wanted to share, whether it's, you know, music or life or whatever else.
Oh, yeah. I think definitely go outside every single day. This is something I'm thinking about right now because I haven't been outside today. And I think I need to just go and like recharge in the sun for a second. And it makes me so much happier.
Nice. Yeah, I feel that. It's been so great being able to actually be outside of the house lately.
Yeah, it's happening more. But then I feel like I, like in my downtime, I have to still persuade myself to go outside if I wasn't planning to already.
Got you. And is there anything else that we haven't hit on about either Like a Stone or the band in general that you've been kind of itching to get out there?
Well, as you already said, we have a release show on Saturday that is online, which will not be the same as a normal show, but I think it will still be cool. And it's on Bandcamp Live, so you can get tickets to it on our Bandcamp on a merch page.
And I have to say, I've had an experience of hooking up my nice speakers to my TV for some of the live streams that I've seen recently.
Really?
And it really brings it to a whole nother level.
Oh, that's good to hear. We have spent a lot of time meticulously planning the audio and video aspect of this, which we're not used to doing. So I hope it turns out okay.
That was my conversation with Remember Sports. And here I am speaking with Downhall.
My name is Gordon, and I play guitar and sing in Downhall.
And my name is Robbie, and I play guitar.
Awesome. And I'm Scott. I'm the host of Fly on the Call, and I'm coming at you with Gordon and Robbie from Downhall, as they just said, so I'll probably edit this out. But I wanted to start with Eyesight, which was the first taste of Proof before it was officially announced, and kind of along with that, you dropped the classic, you know, recording in the studio video with it. And now that I've had time to like really sit with the album as a whole, I appreciate kind of using Eyesight to usher in that new sound and kind of the album as a whole. And, you know, from the video, it seems like it was a pretty intense and emotional recording process. So I'd love to hear a little bit more about, you know, how the album as a whole came together.
Probably you can take that one.
Yeah. Well, speaking to the video, like I think video is something that we've heard from everyone that likes Downhall or is involved in Downhall stuff, is that they always wanted a music video, and we're just like not a music video band. Shouts to anyone that is, like, that takes guts, and that's just like not who we are. So when we were like, okay, we'll give you a video, we'll just have our good buddy Connor from Nonfiction and Cemetery Tapes come to the studio for a few days, get some footage and just like stitch that together. And I think it came out really awesome. He did a really great job with the video. But I think the other thing that it did was it highlighted sort of like something that we were like very proud of with the album, is just like the process in the studio and just sort of like how much fun we had and how hard we worked. And I hope that came across in the video. So I think it was sort of fitting that it was that. Like, I know that they're like, the song Eyesight is not about being in the recording studio. So thematically, it might not seem like a great fit, but I just think it all does work together well. And like to your point about sort of it being a good entryway to like the album as a whole, like that was pretty deliberate as well, because I think it's a good sort of like meeting point between what people may have heard from Downhall before and what we're doing on the new album. So, you know, it's 5 minutes long, so it's not like typical single length, but I think it was a really good sort of like entryway into new Downhall, Downhall 2.0. And like sort of a good sort of bridge as well. So like, you know, if you listen to Leverage and then you listen to Eyesight, like you may sort of pick up on a lot of similarities sonically and just like thematically and like the ideas that and how we like constructed the song, which wasn't like super deliberate, but it came across when we were writing it. And then we sort of realized that this is just sort of like what we wanted to do with Leverage. And I think it came across really well. And like, I just, I think I put this out on Twitter that like, when we like were listening back to that song, like I mentioned to Gordon in the car on the way home, I was like, man, I kind of like choked up, like teared up in the studio. And he was like, dude, I did too. Like, that was just like a very rewarding experience. And so like, I'm glad that that was the first song that people could hear from the record.
Nice. Yeah, and Standing Water being the official album release drop, it's, you know, that's one that's very closely linked with college years and where you lived during that time. And I'd love to hear a little bit more about how that came together, and you know, what you hope people draw from these, you know, specific vivid descriptions of, you know, these places that you know so kind of intimately.
So Standing Water has like an opener kind of feel to it. I think it has to do with like that big major like descending kind of sure-footed chord progression. It's like you know, the 1-7-6-5-4-5-4, something like that in terms of the theory of it all, but it has a very big like driving sort of pulse to it that lent itself to kind of like an announcement feel. But it didn't exactly have the scale of an album opener. So it made a lot of intuitive sense as like the start of the B side of the album. And also we could use it as the announcement single without like giving up too much. Mm-hmm. But to answer your actual question, I guess my hope with that song, other than selfishly to kind of like put all of these sentiments and like places into a time capsule, was even for people who haven't been to that area in Virginia or anything like that, could kind of read into it their own connection to places they've been or places they've lived, not just in college, but like in any time of life where you come to a new area and you live there and then you move away. It's like a very romantic thing. And it was easy for me to kind of like re-inhabit those spaces, not just geographically, but kind of emotionally and sentimentally.
For sure. And the final single for the album is going to be Dried, which kind of makes up this really big 1-2 punch of the album's intro, you know, kind of spanning the first probably quarter of the album. Can you talk a little bit about kind of that one and what, you know, people can expect from when that one drops?
Well, my initial reaction is bear with us, because it starts with like 70 seconds of noise and music, right? There's no vocals for some time. But I think that song, Olivia, who's our publicist, shouts out, made like, she's always like making memes and sending them to us, and she's the best. But she did one that was like, is this the best bridge? Is it even a bridge? I was like, you can call this a bridge. And then she was like, okay, so like dry bridge versus architect bridge for best downhaul bridge. And I think the bridge to Dried is like, I was trying not to do that, one of these like really overly wordy like verses that I always do, where it's like a bunch of like 4-syllable words, 5-syllable words, like no pauses, nothing repeating, like band hits underneath. Like whenever we were talking about that song and assessing it, we were thinking like, this is the song that sounds the most like old downhaul, is kind of like what the four of us were thinking about that song. Especially if you were to like chop off the end and chop off the beginning and make it 3.5 minutes long, like that could be on another release. But I think what kind of makes that bridge so big is like, it's one of the few times I'm playing chords on the baritone guitar across the album, and it just like comes at you. Like sonically, the way Chris arranged those things and EQ'd it and layered it, like when those baritone chords start in the bridge of Dried, like you can't miss it. So don't turn the song off until you get to the bridge.
Yeah, and just sort of like adding to that, the I remember Dried coming along pretty late in the process, and so by that time it was we were working more remotely, and so when we were demoing and sort of like you know, left to our own devices to write our parts, I had a little bit of trouble with that one because you know, the first part of it and the most of it, like Gordon's baritone is doing a lot of work and in an atypical way to the rest of the album. So I was like used to writing a certain way, you know, my parts at least, for the previous songs that we had written. And then when it came to that one, I was a little bit intimidated by it. And I think I was able to sort of, and something that I tried to do for a lot of the songs was not make it sound like it was two guitars. And like, I think on the first album, we got caught up in just like all of this crazy guitar work. And like, it may not sound like that crazy, but it was crazy for us. And so for this album and for Dried, like I really wanted to make it sound sort of like as like one thing, like, and it wasn't so much of like left guitar, right guitar, like it was just sort of like the sound of the album, like the palette of the song. And then like the middle parts, I think really, you know, to Gordon's point about it being like a lot like the old material, I think that first where everything drops out and it's just like Pat playing bass and then like the keyboards come in, like I think that's like one of the other first big moments of the album where you're like, okay, like this isn't the band that I'm used to hearing. And I think that was really rewarding to hear back when Chris sort of put it all together. And then it sort of wraps up with, you know, tried and true Gordon Bridge. But everything around it, I think, is just sort of like it's indicative of the direction of the album. And 6/8, which I love, back to writing in 6/8. So I love a great 6/8 song. So that was really exciting for me personally. And I'm, you know, it could have that we were talking about putting that song out as the first single, but I think it works really, really, really well as the last little taste before you get the album. Because like it sounds like Downhall, but it's very much like rooted in like the new Downhall. It's just like a really great song, and like I think it you know, by the end of it you're just sort of like slack jawed a little bit, just sort of like, wow, I don't even know what just happened, but I think I like it. So I think it's a good single choice for that reason.
That's another episode wrapped. Two really fun conversations about two of my favorite releases in a year that's going to make it hard for choosing year-end lists. But that won't stop my never-ending quest to find even more great music. Don't forget to check out Downhall's new album, Proof, out tomorrow, and the Remember Sports record release show via Bandcamp live on Saturday. Fly in the Call is brought to you by Sound Talent Media. A special thank you, as always, to The Alternative for helping to promote the show, Kaylin West of Tiny Stills for the theme song, and Michaela Jane for the artwork. You can keep up to date by subscribing to the podcast and following the show on Twitter and Instagram at FlyInTheCallPod. Feel free to email any questions, comments, or other feedback to me at FlyInTheCallPod@gmail.com. Find the music you love and never shut up about it.
Hey, what's up? This is Blake Weiland. I'm the host of the Tone Mob Podcast. It's a show where I interview guitar people about guitar stuff. We talk about their pedals, their amps, their accessories, their preferences, all that stuff, as well as a healthy dose of whatever comes up. Topics have ranged from aliens to addiction and anywhere in between. Oh yeah, and pizza. We're definitely going to be talking about pizza. So get the show wherever you're listening to this podcast at. Just search The Tone Mob in your search bar and it will pop right up. Come join us. We're having a lot of fun. Thanks for checking it out.